Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Comes a Reckoning by John G. Harkness. Narrated by James Anderson Foster. 1.
The sun came up over the Queen City and found me waiting on my balcony again, Irish coffee in hand, trying to drink away my guilt and the recriminations of the dead. It wasn't working. It never does. The more I drank, the clearer the faces became in my memory, the sharper their voices got. I don't remember everyone I've killed. I don't know that humans, or mostly humans, or whatever I am, are meant to be able to keep that many people in memory. My body count numbers in the hundreds, most of them monsters from other planes of existence, but a good number of monsters from right here on Earth, too. Vampires, lycanthropes, demons, half-demons, rapists, murderers. My human death toll is probably well into the triple digits, too, and that's without remembering all the Nazis I killed when I was a little insane. I can't keep track of all of them, and I don't really give a shit. Human or monster, they were evil, and somebody had to take out the trash. By sheer luck, weird mystical genetics, and a thoroughly shoddy upbringing by my parasitic uncle, I was elected sanitation engineer for humanity. Whatever. Like I said, somebody has to do it. If not me, then it would probably fall to some poor schmuck even more ill-suited to the task than I am. But I don't remember the bad guys. Don't even try. Can't remember the bad people I've killed, but I can't forget the good ones. The ones who died at my hand, or died because I wasn't in the right place, or because I made a mistake. The ones who died because I wasn't good enough, because they trusted me to keep them safe, because I failed them. Cassie, who died because I wasn't fast enough to knock Watson aside. Stupid, beguiled Watson, the one-legged man who kicked my ass and murdered the woman Luke loved. Dennis, who died because in my hubris I thought that nobody would ever come after my friends to get me. Christy, who died because she was in the wrong place at the wrong time when my maelstrom of shit whirled past and swept her up. Renfield, who died because a half-demon bastard thought it would be deliciously ironic to bring his dear old dad to Earth by killing someone I cared about. Joe, the priest, and maybe more, who gave his life to rescue a piece of evidence for my fight. And Gabby, that one stung the most, and not just because it was the freshest. It hurt because it was so stupid, so goddamn random that I finally, for the first time in a long time, found myself believing that there really was a god, because he was obviously a fucking prick.
Out here praying, cursing, or just drinking? Faustus said from the sliding glass door behind me.
I turned and found the usually dapper demon wearing his human suit, but barefoot in a pair of jeans and a Lady Gaga t-shirt. He held out a handle of Bacardi 151, but I shook my head. Pass. It's barely worth it to try and get drunk. My metabolism is so fast.
Oh, I know,
he replied, coming to lean next to me on the balcony railing. Faustus was a good-looking man in his human form, brown hair with a little stubble, piercing blue eyes, and a cleft chin. I could see why he never had much trouble convincing people to sell their soul to him. I haven't been able to get drunk since I stopped drinking Prohibition hooch. None of this legal stuff has enough alcohol and sin attached to it. But sometimes it's the only solution to a problem. He took a long pull from the bottle, then hurled the rest out onto the lightning sky. God damn it, Faustus, I snapped, firing off a purple blast of raw energy and shattering the bottle before it crashed down onto the busy South Boulevard below and caused a 10-car pile-up.
Sorry,
he said, without an ounce of regret in his voice.
Demon, old habits die hard.
You okay? I asked. Not a question I ever thought I'd ask a demon, but these were pretty uncharted waters we found ourselves in lately.
No, he replied. You people have fucked me up. I'm a demon for Lucifer's sake. I'm supposed to be sowing havoc and reaping souls, reveling in the suffering of humanity, but instead I...
Give a shit? I finished, walking over to one of the heavy metal chairs and sitting down. Sucks, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does.
Faustus sat across from me and looked chagrined.
And now I want a drink, but I threw my booze away.
I would tell you to go get something off my bar, but I'm pretty sure that's where the last one came from.
Oh, yeah, that was totally your liquor you blew up.
We sat there for a second looking at each other, then I snickered. Then Faustus snorted a little, then it grew into a laugh, and before I knew it, the two of us were sitting across my patio table from each other, laughing until tears rolled down our cheeks. Somewhere along the way, they stopped being tears of laughter, and then we were just sitting there crying. I leaned forward and patted him on the shoulder, the way you do when you kind of want to hug somebody, but neither of you are the hugging type, but you feel like some kind of contact is needed.
I really liked her, he said.
He was still looking down, his gaze locked on his hands, which were clenched on the table. I could see his knuckles turning white, like the effort of holding his hands together was the only thing keeping him together. And I squeezed his shoulder again. I know. Faustus and Gabby had an on-again, off-again relationship. One of those things where people have a lot of sex and really like hanging out, but they know that if they're around each other too much, eventually they'll have all the sex they want to have with each other, and then one of them will probably murder the other in their sleep.
And I fucking trusted him. Now we were into the guts of it. Not a week before Gabby got herself turned into a kebab by a piece of debris in an explosion, Jack Watson, one of my allies, and quite possibly Faustus's first real friend in, well, ever, betrayed us all and killed Cassie while trying to murder Luke. Luke then reminded all of us exactly what they used to call him on the battlefields of Wallachia, and left Watson's corpse in the middle of a high school football field.
Yeah, I said. People suck.
Faustus looked up at me, his yellow demonic gaze burning through the illusion of his meat suit.
You don't get it, Harker. I was raised in hell. Betrayal is a fucking art form to me and mine. I've been around since the fall, and I've never trusted anyone. But I trusted Jack. I trusted that prick, and he killed Cassie, and now, because of him killing Cassie, Gabby's dead, and all because I...
No. I cut him off short. He glared at me, but I kept talking. You don't get to hog all the blame. We all trusted Jack, and you might be older than the rest of us, but we've all seen enough shit to know who we can and can't trust. Most of the time. But he snowed us all, and yeah, if he doesn't kill Cassie, then Luke doesn't go dark, and maybe doesn't end up in that building where Joe and Gabby got blown up. But that's not on you. It's not on you. It's not on me. It's not on Luke. None of us. It's on Jack and Director Shaw, whoever she really was, and this master prick who's behind all this bullshit. And you know what?
What?
Every one of those motherfuckers is dead. Except for the master. So now we've got one job.
Find the master
and send him down to hell to catch up with all his friends. Now, do you want to sit here in the corner and cry, or do you want to get the fuck to work and go find this son of a bitch?
Let's get to work.
He stood up and ran his hand across his face. It instantly dried, with no red eyes, no runny nose, nothing. I guess there's something to be said for having an illusory countenance. Go find Luke and translate that goddamned grimoire. It's in a dialect of German that I can't figure out. Faustus snapped off a salute and went inside, moving with a purpose.
That was well done,
Beck said through the telepathic link we shared. How long were you listening?
You woke me up when you were laughing. That sent some really weird signals through your head.
Sorry.
It's fine, she replied. It was better than the numbness you've been sending. I was starting to get worried.
I'm okay, I said. I felt her laugh inside my head.
You're so far from okay, you're not even in the same time zone. But you're functional, and that's enough to get us started. Now get in here and let's get a shower. Everybody else will be here in an hour, and I want breakfast before we start our grand planning session.
I haven't lived over a century by not learning a thing or two, and one of the new lessons I learned over the past few years was that when the woman who shares your bed and your psyche tells you to do something, you should do it. So I carried my coffee cup inside, closed the sliding glass door, and gave one look back at the sun as it crested the horizon, bathing the city in crimson. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning, I thought. Sailors, masters, whatever. Anybody who wanted to mess with my family should look to the sky and take the warning. It was time to fight back.
2.
I stood at the head of the conference table and took a moment to look at the remnants of us. Jack's chair beside Faustus sat empty, and I suppose I was a little bit grateful that neither the demon nor I had thrown it off the balcony, because that would have been difficult to explain. And because I can't vouch for me having the presence of mind to open the sliding glass door first. Bex was at my right hand, as always, but instead of the sensible copwear I'd grown accustomed to seeing her in, she was looking more like the yin to my guardian angel Glory's yang these days. Bex left the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department after a disagreement with department leadership over their willingness to commit ridiculous levels of brutality against their own citizens, all to make sure their bloated budget kept getting approved every year. Nowadays, she was deputy director of the Department of Homeland Security's Paranormal Division, working for our ally, Regional Director Kaya Pravesh. Because working for the federal government was such a step up from working for the local cops. Either way, Homeland's dress code was a lot less slacks and sport coats cut to hide your sidearm and more Lilith Fair t-shirts and jeans with a Glock clipped to her waistband for all the world to see. Glory was across the table from her at my left elbow, kicked back in her chair with her feet up on the table and her hands behind her head. I smacked her purple docks onto the floor and grinned as she sat up involuntarily. She glared at me from under a curtain of blonde curls that spilled down onto the shoulders of the white Def Leppard tee she wore, or conjured, more likely. Like Faustus, I wasn't sure where Glory's clothes came from, but I was pretty sure it had more in common with fairy dust than the clearance racks at Goodwill. The foot of the table was reserved for Luke, my uncle, mentor, and, oh, by the way, the most famous vampire in history. Gabby Van Helsing managed to rescue him from a bunch of demons' assholes before they got themselves blown up, killing Gabby in the process. Next to him sat Jo Henry, the muscular great-granddaughter of the legendary John Henry, and daughter of Cassandra Harrison, Luke's most recent Renfield. Also, and not even a little coincidentally, the most recent woman my uncle fell deeply in love with. When she died at the hands of Jack Watson, Luke went over to the dark side for a little bit. I wasn't completely convinced he was all the way back. I knew for damn sure Joe wasn't. So, hey, I said, then stood there staring at them all like a blithering idiot, or I guess a not blithering idiot, since I didn't even say anything.
God, Harker, you suck at this, Beck said. Sit down and let's talk about where we go next. You look like a general without any idea who the enemy even is, much less how to find them and kick their ass.
I did as she said and sat down. I wish there wasn't any truth in that, Bex. I don't have any idea who this master asshole is, how to find him, if he can even be killed, and what the hell his beef is with me and mine.
Well, what do we know? Bex asked.
I allowed myself a little smile as she slipped right back into the role of detective. Good thing, because we definitely needed somebody driving this bus who knew how to solve a mystery. We know he's after me, and he's not afraid of killing the people I care about to get at me, I said.
Not only is he not afraid of it, it's kind of his whole plan, Glory said. Watson had specific instructions to kill Luke in the hopes it would push you over the edge.
Yeah, I sense a theme here, I said. That was Mangala's goal, too. Torture me until I go all code red on everyone around me. When Bex pulled me out of that, the master had to change plans.
Because obviously going at you directly was hazardous on his henchman's health, Glory said with a smirk.
I shot her a look and she shrugged.
What? You literally ripped that dude limb from limb. Then you beat his torso into pieces with his own severed arms. It was the kind of savagery that people make slasher movies about, only most horror directors don't have the imagination for that kind of ass-kicking.
He was a Nazi, I replied. I should have T-shirts printed up. Quincy fucking Harker, killing Nazis since 1939.
He wasn't just a Nazi, Bex said. He was Josef Mengele, one of the most famous murderers in history, the guy who led the SS experiments on prisoners at Auschwitz. And he was still alive in the 21st century and looking closer to 50 than 90, so there was something weird going on with him.
The Nazis were into a lot of different shit, I said. They had a whole occult division looking for artifacts, spell books, potions, cryptids. Anything they thought would help them achieve their goals, they were into. Luke spent a lot of the 40s either swapping the stuff they were looking for out with harmless fakes or just killing any Aryan fuckhole who got too close to anything with real power. But a few things slipped through the cracks.
Most notably, the Spear of Destiny, Luke said.
Yeah, that wasn't our most shining moment, I said. Letting the spear that pierced the side of Christ on the cross fall into the hands of Der Fuhrer was a pretty epic fail, but he killed himself before he managed to unlock any of the spear's powers.
Or so we think, Faustus added.
A whole lot of eyeballs suddenly zeroed in on the demon at the table.
What exactly do you mean by that, Faustus? Bex asked.
Well, we don't think Hitler managed to get the spear to do anything because he still lost the war and offed himself in his bunker. But we don't know that he didn't get it to work, and we certainly don't know if any of his hench pricks managed to unlock some of its power.
But an implement in the hands of the wrong person could certainly instill longevity in a human, or perhaps even immortality, Luke said.
The Spear of Destiny did double duty as the divine focus of the Archangel Azrael, the Angel of Death. It was his implement. All the Archangels had one. I know, I'm the one who had to go collect them like they were fucking Pokemon a couple years ago. Mangala wasn't immortal, I said. I killed the shit out of him.
There's a difference between immortal and invulnerable, Q, Glory said. Mangala wouldn't die of natural causes, but you are anything but natural causes.
Makes sense, I agreed. Okay, so Mangala or some other Nazi fuck managed to unlock the power of the Spear of Destiny, or at least some of it, and it made him immortal. You think this master was part of that deal? Was he a Nazi shitbag too, or just a regular shitbag?
Harker, have you ever used the word Nazi as a noun without having a profanity associated with it? Bex asked. I'm just curious.
I thought about it for a second. I can't say with 100% certainty about my entire life, because I had to deal with a lot of Nazi cock wrinkles in Europe in the 40s, but
I can guarantee you that I have never called anyone just a Nazi before. They're always Nazi, insert insulting and probably profane term here. I really don't like Nazis, I said.
Oh, I'm very aware of that, Beck said. I'm inside your head, remember?
That must be a truly terrifying place to be, Faustus said. And I grew up in hell.
Fausti, you have no idea, Bex replied.
Okay, I said, holding up both hands to try and regain a tiny bit of order. So we know there are Nazi ass clowns involved, and we know they want to turn me back into a psycho killer and turn me loose on the world.
We know they're interested in taking the sliver of the demon Skyfrax out of Luke and setting him free upon the world, Glory added. Is that even possible? Bex asked.
We all looked at each other, the vampire, the magician, the angel, the demon, and the humans. After a pause that I found a lot longer than was comfortable, Faustus shrugged and said,
Maybe. I mean, you two are kind of an anomaly. There have been a lot of deals made with demons over the centuries, I should know, but no one has ever taken a piece of one of us inside themselves and kept hold of it for this long. Most people would have succumbed to possession before the first century was up.
I always said you were stubborn, I told Luke with a wry smile. He didn't return it.
The first several decades were very difficult. It wasn't until I accidentally had the blood of an enemy run into my mouth on the battlefield that I realized the blood quieted the demon inside me.
Wait, so you don't have to drink blood to survive? I asked. Fireworks were going off inside my head as everything I'd known for more than a century started to rewrite itself.
No, Luke said. Blood is the conduit for my ongoing survival, and by this point, it has mutated into a hunger that is physical. If I go too long without it, I weaken and begin to starve, and as I weaken, Skyfrax becomes stronger. Thus my lack of discretion when I have not fed for a time.
I love my uncle's gift for understatement. That had to be the most refined way of saying, I'll eat anyone in sight like the Tasmanian devil going after a turkey leg if I get hungry enough. I'd seen Luke blood-starved. It was some scary shit. I could certainly see a demonic component to him in that situation.
Is that where they took you? I asked. When I was in Memphis and Demon and Mangala kidnapped you, were they trying to cut Skyfrax free?
I don't know, Quincy, Luke replied. We did not have much opportunity for conversation. They kidnapped me, locked me in a cell, and left me to starve. I was not given the chance to question their motives.
And they were a little dead by the time you got loose, I said. I remember. So let's assume that was the plan. They talked about someone called the Chancellor pulling Shaw's strings, but the guys from the warehouse were talking about the Master.
Are they the same person? Glory asked.
Fuck if I know, I said. Seems like. And this dickhead does have a penchant for using multiple names to sow confusion. Case in point, the half-dozen Director Shaws we've put in body bags. A slight exaggeration, but not through any fault of mine. I would have happily gone on murdering demon directors as often as I was given the chance. I had a feeling Pravesh might object.
Maybe. Okay, if the Chancellor and the Master are the same person, then we're back to Nazis. Sorry, Nazi shitheads, Beck said.
So, if we just pretend that I've never been much on politics, would someone explain the connection?
Faustus asked. We all stared at him for a moment.
Look, I make deals and I take souls. While I appreciate the opportunity for greater volume of soul-stealing that politics gives one, I've always favored a more personal approach. I'm not saying I didn't have plenty going on in Nazi Germany. I just never paid much attention to titles.
Hitler was Chancellor of Germany, I said. Among other titles. A lot of other titles, if I recall. You don't think this Chancellor, or Master, or whatever, might be a sawed-off little house painter with a penchant for titles, do you? Beck said, her eyes flashing wide. No, Faustus said, his tone definitive. At the exact same moment, Glory said, not a chance. I raised an eyebrow at my guardian angel, and she said, oh, he's in hell. I promise you he's in hell. Shit, I wouldn't be surprised if Lucifer built a whole new wing just to torment that little fuck. Right, Faustus? Oh, not just Lucifer. He's the plaything of every major demon in the place. He gets passed around more than a bottle of cheap bourbon at a high school bonfire. It's not often someone gets tossed down and the only directions from on high are, do what you want with them. So everyone gets really excited for their turn torturing Hitler. I hear a guy on the Fourth Circle actually came up with a weapon so excruciating that he got promoted all the way down to the Seventh Circle for it. Okay, so it's not Hitler, I said, trying once again to herd the kittens. I was starting to feel a tiny bit of sympathy for Flynn having to keep me on task, but just a little. And we need to figure out who it is, where they are, and how to kill the motherfucker. Joe stood up, the first time she'd moved or really even seemed engaged in the discussion since she'd sat down. All that sounds great, and it's real important, but you're going to have to do it without me. I only came this morning to tell you that my stuff is all packed. As soon as Ginny gets out of school, we're headed back to Phoenix. I can't do this anymore. I can't be here anymore. I'm out. And with that, she laid her great-grandfather's hammer on the conference table and walked out of my apartment. 3. I shook loose the paralysis that Joe's bombshell gripped me with and chased after her. I caught her arm as she turned into the hallway toward her apartment. She stopped and looked at me. You really want to let go of my arm, Harker? Her voice was low and steady, but her eyes were brimming with rage. I did as she asked and let go. Okay, I said, stepping back. No grabbing. Got it. But can we talk about this? I reached out across our mental connection for Bex, but got nothing. Just a vague sense that she was paying attention, but she certainly wasn't contributing. I was on my own for this one. There's nothing to talk about. I'm done. I'm taking my little girl, and I'm getting as far away from this shit show you call a life as I can, while she's still young enough to maybe forget some of the insane stuff she's seen, and maybe, just maybe, grow up to be a normal, well-adjusted woman who doesn't feel the need to swing a magic hammer at every problem in her life. Shit, maybe I'll even try to rebuild a bridge with my in-laws so she can have one set of grandparents at least. That hit home. I knew what had been taken from Joe. Hell, I'd been there for most of it. Her father, killed by a werewolf who then came hunting her later. Her husband, ripped to shreds by something we never even managed to identify. Her mother, who died right in front of her at the hands of someone we thought was a friend. It wasn't pretty, the wreckage this life left in its wake. The scars it left on the survivors. Okay. A look of shock came over Joe's face. What? I said, okay. You're right. Ginny deserves the chance to grow up without all this shit around her. Without wondering when somebody who isn't me tucks her in at night if Mommy is coming home. Without buying new funeral clothes every year when she buys her new school clothes because death is just something that happens around us. She doesn't need to be around that, and neither do you. You both deserve better. But you should take this anyway, Glory said as she stepped up beside me. Angels are sneaky, just in case you didn't know that. Way sneaky. She held out John Henry's hammer like it weighed nothing. We all knew better. That thing had a heft to it that was a lot more than the 9-pound iron and silver head. I don't want it, Joe said. I've never wanted it. I don't think it cares, I replied. Remember what happened the last time you tried to leave it behind?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?